Accession number 14932, Norman Edwards, reel 10. Sorry, reel 9.
Mr. Edwards, reel 9. Now, we're talking about your training in England before you were sent to France. Had at any time you actually been introduced to the tanks? I mean, had you actually had a chance to get in them and to drive in them and to use them at all? Or was it purely theoretical on the gunnery?
No, we used to... We fired the 6-pounder guns from a tank.
What was it like to fire a 6-pounder in a tank?
As far as I can remember now, you simply saw the target. The officer in charge of the thing would say, enemy gun left centre or something of that sort, range such and such. You would set that range on the thing and then wait for the word fire. And then you just let it go bang.
But what was the noise like in the tank?
It was a very ordinary sort of gun, you know.
What was the noise of the discharge like in the tank? I mean, did it?
Well, it was a pretty hefty thud, a bit of smoke usually from the cordite, you know.
Did you actually travel in a tank, or was this just stationary firing?
Oh no, we did it traveling in a tank.
What was it like to travel in a tank?
Well, you sort of got used to it after a time. Things you could peer out through the thing, you would see things going past you. The difficulty was if, for instance, I found out when I created the tank gunnery school later on in Merlimont, you'd start off up like that way. After about 50 yards, there would be a line of trenches. One tank would go that way. Then there'd be another connection that way, and you come back again. And you had to sort of give the orders from the conning tower in the tank where you were. As you were going along, you'd give them the order that turn left or turn right, as the case may be.
How would you do that?
Pardon?
How would you do that?
We bang on the casing there and put that side in neutral so that this one was driving, it would go on round, you see.
So
if you wanted to go that way, you'd put this side in neutral and then the other one would go on and the tank would turn right. Generally by signs, and because
so
you couldn't hear very much.
You'd do that. You'd signal to your driver. So that's how you'd signal to your driver. You'd bang.
Yes, that's just a... Did you say that again?
So how would you signal to your driver? I mean, said...
That's the way...
Would you touch
him?
Well,
you would be sitting alongside the driver. You could shout into his ear.
What was the noise like in a tank?
Well, it was...
From the engine, I mean. And
the engine noise. You could make yourself heard by shouting, you know, yelling, left gun fire, right gun fire, that sort of thing.
What about the fumes from the engine? Was there a problem with fumes from the engine?
The exhaust seemed to be carried outside by pretty well... I don't ever remember being worried about it.
Now, you left for France on the 20th of September.
Yes.
1917. Do you remember your trip out?
I went to where?
France. 20th of September.
Oh, yes. I remember that. And when I got there, I seemed to have been lost. Nobody seemed to know why I'd been sent there. And for some days... I was sort of sitting in a dugout, no, a billet, waiting for instructions as to what I had to do. And finally I'd got the instruction to report at this Merlimont Plage place. Well, I found out, I had to get an atlas to find out where Merlimont Plage was. And it was on the coast, sort of about 5 or 6 miles south of Paris Plage. I said, well, this sounds like a place where you can get some sea bathing. And I finally got down to this village and found out which was the headquarters and reported to the captain there in charge of it. I've forgotten his name now. And from there, the thing slowly grew. We used to have lectures every day. And then finally, they decided we'd have a fixed battery. And I had to find a location for that.
Now, I'll come to that. But what were you joining? What was this establishment at Merlimont?
Well, it was headquarters, sort of a creation of a tank corps gunnery school.
And who was in charge?
Somebody at headquarters had picked out A, B and C, and I was apparently thought that I'd had special training in London, at home, and satisfied the instruct people in Bovington that I was a suitable chap to be an officer at this school.
And who was in charge?
Now, I can't think of his name at the moment. It's written down in there, but he was a captain and a rather sarcastic gentleman. I remember he used to go horse riding with a lady in charge of the YMCA depot, and he was a rather superior type. He looked upon people like me as being rather, you know, also rans. Anyway, I was told that they were dividing the gunnery school into three sections.
And what were they?
The 6-pounder section.
What were the other two before we come to that? Do you remember? You said there were three sections. What were the other two sections?
Well, wait a minute. The first one was the 6-pounder section. The second one was the machine gun section. And the third one was the battle practice wing.
Now, which were you put?
And in the end, I was put in charge of the battle practice wing. Now then, that meant I was given 2 miles of dunes and an area at the back of it. And from there, I had to create a certain area where men could, having learned how to handle weapons, could actually fire shots from them. It had a row of trenches on the flats. You go forward, you turn right, forward, back again, and so forth. And up here were dunes facing the sea. And we were 2 miles, and that was sort of at no pattern. Nobody could go down the beaches there.
Now, who had created this practice area?
Well, there was nothing there. I had to create all this. First thing I did was to get location for 6-pounder guns and fix them stationary. Fix battery. That's just to teach the man to load, unload, set the sights and so forth. And that was the first thing they would do in the training. You tell them what
there's a picture of that in your there's a picture of that in your photograph
yes,
album.
Yes. Yep. A 6-pounder at a time. Then the next move was actually
Would they actually fire from that battery?
Yes. And we used to put targets in the dunes and they would fire at them at various ranges, which you would tell them to set the sights at such and such, see. And
so that was the first thing.
As a diversion later on, they said when the Germans were hiding in the growing crops, when we were advancing, an effort came down from headquarters about, can't you arrange for your 6-pounder guns to have a sort of scatter shot, like a shrapnel? And I had to work out a scheme whereby this grape shot fire was what you had to set the sights at to make it the best effort to so that the bullets didn't go up in the air, but they would spread out across the growing crops to where the Germans were. And I think as a result of that work...
How did you do it? Do you remember how you did it?
Well, what I did it was to make a series of targets at various ranges, at 150 yards, at 200 yards, at 250 and so on, and set them in the various dunes, and then set the sights to fire at the base of the target, and after it had done it, count the number of bullet holes in the screens, and then adjust the setting of the sights to get the greatest number of hits on these targets. And that, I believe, was the one that earned me the mention in dispatches, I think, for the work I'd put in on there, because I started off with a report with all the things and gradually brought it down to the final was set sights at so and forth, aim at base of corn. It was something that you could really tell the men to do.
But that's a bit of a diversion for us. So the men would first go, when you were training, they'd go on this 6-pounder battery.
That was a 6-pounder battery, yes.
Oh, and then what would happen? What was the next stage of their training at battle practice?
Well, their next training in battle practice was to be get in the tank, be on the left gun or the right gun, await the officer in charge of the tank who was sitting up there and seeing things, and he would say, left gun, target, 450 yards, so and so. And when you're on the target, you could fire. Because, you see, the trouble was that you had to put something for them to see. And later on in the effort, I fixed up some electrical devices there so that you put a board up, which was like the two wheels of a tank, a centerpiece with a big black round dot on that was the barrel, and arranged for a light to flash on that thing. But it was a very difficult job. You had to make a dugout so that the chap was safe in it. And every time a hit was registered on this thing, you had to go and repair and put out a new holder for an electric flash. I thought afterwards that perhaps it was a bit, a bit too much of a good thing to try and make all these things. But I wanted to try and make it interesting for the people, something they could see and do and see it actually hitting things, a target.
Was it not difficult to hit a target from a moving tank?
Well, very difficult because the thing was going up and down and that sort of thing, and you keep on. Wait until the tank was on a bit of steady ground, then you set the thing. But of course, if a tank was crossing another trench, everything would go wrong. Your gun would be pointing up in the air 1 minute and down that way the next. There's no good firing that. You had to wait until you could get the target on the gun. Somehow or the other, you get the feeling, now we should be on flat ground in a minute. But don't start firing while we're on this crawling over obstacles.
Now, what else would they... I mean, you were doing battle practice, but was it only gunnery battle practice, or were you doing it for the drivers as well?
I can't remember. I think it was sort of. I was the gunnery officer, you see, so I didn't bother about the driving. Somebody else's job was to.
But what I mean is, this was battle practice for gunnery, not battle practice for tanks. I mean, the tanks were obviously.
Well, it was known as the Tank Corps Gunnery School.
So they'd learn the tactics of tank warfare somewhere else.
Well, they may. I didn't certainly have anything to do with the tactical weapons.
So would you have any idea of how tanks were meant to communicate with each other in action?
No.
That wasn't your business?
I think it was somebody else's job. There was a telegraphist type of officer who worked all that and got some detail where they could hear get instructions from headquarters, but I had nothing to do with that.
So, do you know much about tank tactics that you could tell us?
Not very much, I'm afraid. It's a question of so much as the enemy are there, go for them.
How were the tanks? Do you know how the tanks were meant to communicate with infantry?
I can't remember ever having any contact with the infantry. So
they didn't train together at all?
No, there was no training in infantry. It was entirely confined to the tanks.
No, but what I meant was there was no training with the infantry there. There's no cooperation.
Not down at this Merlimont-Plage place.
Now, the next thing I want to ask you about is you said that the school was divided into three sections.
Yes, there were sort of three divisions.
You were in a battle practice section, but what did the six-pounder section do?
Well, the Maxim gun, the six-pounder section, was simply to learn how to load and fire a six-pounder gun from a stationary position. That would be, you see, there were 10 of these things stuck on the ground, and when the men first arrived, you would tell them that each tank is armed with machine guns both, and six-pounder rifles. There are the six-pounder guns. Now, to load and fire these things, we have to demonstrate it to you. So you would take a shell and open the breech and push it in and close the breech and then arrange the sighting, and they'd fire at a target in the dunes. It was just the after a period of time, the men, when they'd done their firing with the machine gun, done their firing with a six-pounder or from a fixed battery, then you would take them put them into a moving tank, and they would have the chance of being able to fire from a tank as they would in action.
And that was your part. That was your section.
My section was the battle practice wing at the end. Yes.
What did you do earlier? Before you said that was at the end. What were you doing before that?
Well, you see, before that, you've got to go back a bit. After I was recovering from wounds, I applied for a commission. I was granted that, but as a young trainee officer, you were put through various sections, and when I was being put through on machine gun section, battery, then of course I was able to tell the instructors one or two things because I'd had this actual firing experience. The result was that one of the men mentioned this to one of the senior officers, and I was pulled out from this thing and given special training as a sort of a gunnery officer, having satisfied them that I knew what I was talking about on machine guns and six-pounder guns and so forth. I was whipped off to France, where we were just beginning to make this school at Merlimont-Plage.
But did you go straight into the battle practice section when you got to...
No, when I got there, first of all, that's rather interesting. When I arrived in France, I seemed to be lost for a bit. Nothing happened. Nobody got in touch with me, and I was just sort of dumped in a sort of a great area of people where recruits were brought in. And finally, I was they discovered where I was and pushed me off down to this Merlimont-Plage place, which was at that very beginning.
Yeah, but when you got to Merlimont-Plage, were you put straight onto battle practice, or did you do anything else first?
No, well, it was being created, it was growing, it was growing. The men were being brought down there and trained and so forth, and they were looking around for officers who knew their job. Well, as I knew a good deal about machine guns, I was put onto this, and from that thing, they thought, well, we now got two or three other officers who also know about machine guns, but we've got nobody at the moment who's going to be on the six-pounder work. So I had some sort of special training, that sort of thing, was then given, the thing sort of developed and grew into the machine gun thing, six-pounder, and then to have this battle practice wing was you put the men in the tank, you'd go up the straight forward, then you turn right along a trench, and you turn left along, and keep on moving up and down the whole time, and that was the training, you see, for the officers in charge of the tank too. They had to give the instructions as to when the man should turn and so forth, and they also were on the lookout the whole time for targets, and we were, say I was down here on the left gun, the chap was on the right gun, you might get an order from left gun, target, say machine gun or enemy artillery gun, such and such thing, range about 500 yards, half left. And the man on the tank would bring his rifle round and start peering out, and he would suddenly spot some target out there, lay his gun onto that, and then the officer said, "Are you on the target?" "Yes." "Well, start firing." And then they'd say, your shots are too low or too high, too more of the right, so forth. Give them, to instruct the men to fire and hit the target that they destined.
Now, what sort of obstacles were they going over in the tanks? How big? I mean, was it a test of what they could go over as well?
Well, they were attempting trenches, after all, the tank to get. When you dig in a trench, you chuck all the dirt on the side, so you've got to go up over a bit, then down, and it was, the thing was lurching, moving aside all the time. You were on the gun, you were moving the wheel for either to the right or left to keep your, while the tank was on the move, to keep on that target once you spotted it. It was quite a maneuver.
So again, you weren't practicing the driving of tanks, just gunnery, the officer and the gunner. That's what you were practicing.
Oh no, you were in charge of the thing.
But that's what you were practicing. The officer and the gunner, they were the people who were practicing, not the driver.
Oh no, the driver was just because the actual driving the tank there was negligible. There was a flat place, a trench, two or three trenches. Well, the simplest thing in the world to sort of go up that thing, and the nose of the tank would dip down across, then he would crawl along and up the other side.
Would you be thrown about inside the tank when it went over obstacles?
Well,
like
you
that?
Were being pushed around a little bit. I tell you one instance, if I digress for a moment. On one occasion, I was down on the range at about just before 9 o'clock, when a car drove up, chap got out with red tabs, a senior officer. "Who's in charge here?" I said, "I am, sir." Well, he said, "What time is this practice? Isn't this practice supposed to start at 8:30 in the morning?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Well, why hasn't it gone then?" I said, "Because the tank has not arrived. You said, for some reason, the tank hasn't arrived." "Why hasn't it?" Well, I said, you have to ask the tank officer that. Then at that moment, a tank arrived. And he talked to this fellow who was in charge of the tank. And he said, when he said, "If I tell my chauffeur to have the car ready at 8:30, I expect it to be there." And the officer looked at him and said, "With great interest, with respect, sir, you cannot compare a tank which is weighing 28 tons and has been lying out in the swamp all night, frozen swamp, with a car that's been in a warm garage. I said, we do our best to get it on the parade, and at that moment the tank drew up, you see. Then we started firing, and this staff officer was walking with me behind the tank, and he said, don't think much of the shooting, bloody awful shooting, isn't it? I said, well, it's very difficult on a misty morning to see these things. I said, would you care to try yourself then? And I persuaded him to get in this tank, and the tank started up there, and there were about three shots went bang, 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 and it stopped. Door came open, he came out, and I said, well, how did it go? So he said, well, you're quite right, it is a bit misty, but he said, I can't stop, I've got another appointment. In other words, he was very anxious to get out of the place altogether.
Now, one thing that you've lent us a photograph album, there's pictures of tanks, quite a lot of tanks with smoke apparatus or grenades.
Yes.
Did you do some work on testing smoke apparatus at the battle practice ground?
Well, we had this smoke apparatus. For instance,
How did it work?
I forgot to mention one thing. When I put this staff officer in, who was being rather pugnacious, I said to the sergeant in charge of the tank, go slowly upstream with the wind is following and get the smoke screen going. See, so he went along in a cloud of smoke, really.
How did the smoke apparatus work?
Well, I forget now, all you did was to sort of pull a lever and a certain amount of oil or what have you was pushed into the exhaust and it came out as smoke.
Did it make a good cloud?
Well, it wasn't a thick cloud, I think, but it would make it a bit difficult for the enemy to see it.
Did the tanks have any other special equipment?
Don't think there's any special equipment. I think, as far as I know, most tanks were equipped with this smoke screen apparatus. But I wouldn't be sure about that.
Now, who took the photographs of the tanks in your album? You know, you've got this photograph album with you've got quite a lot of photographs of tanks.
Yes.
Who took those photographs?
I think I did.
Why were there so many tanks? I mean, in some of them there are several tanks all giving out smoke. What were they doing there?
Well, any tanks that were in pictures on that thing were down on the battle practice range. None of them were in action against the enemy.
But why were there so many, and why were they giving off smoke?
That I can't answer. Yeah, most mornings, of course, in the winter there, when the exhaust came out, it was smoky without putting the special apparatus on. it was a pretty rough, difficult job to do in the winter there.
Do you remember the time when you gave some nurses a lift? Some nurses a lift.
Yes. A padre arrived one day on the range, early in the morning, and he got out of his car, and there were two VAD nurses with him. And he came across to me and he said, any chance of a ride in the tank? And there were these two very charming young ladies there. I said, oh yes, come on, jump in. So they got in the tank, and I drove it myself went up there over the bumps and so forth. And then, to my absolute horror, when we were going along, I suddenly heard a noise something made me turn around, and I could see fire behind me. Well, there was one part of the tank which was I think it was called the AutoVax. I don't know what it did, I don't know. But there'd been a slight leak on this thing, and this thing had got on fire. So, of course, I stopped and I said to the tap, "Quick, get out of this thing and get the two ladies away and disappear. Go away." And the NCO in charge of the thing got a pyrene and he squirted this thing and he had the thing under control in no time, you see. Well,